It's times like this that I want to remind us that our souls signed up for this. Our souls signed up for this. In ministerial school, they slipped us a piece of paper, the dean did, this like little secret, like a fortune, and he opened it up and said, "I choose to be here," and she said, "Remember that." So I pass that on to you. But we did not only choose to be here, your unique soul is needed now. Because it's your ability to hold peace, to be peace, to carry peace, to embody peace that is needed. You're called. You were called. And everybody is needed. All hands on deck. All minds on deck. All hearts on deck. All prayers on deck. Right? Yeah. This is how we make peace. And things happen in the world to give us the opportunity to learn when we haven't learned collectively. So would you like to experience perfect peace? Yeah. Would you like to have the ability to stand, even in personal situations, right? To stand in that place of peace in the midst of a stormy argument with your beloved? Would you like to be somebody who can be in peace in times of health challenges for yourself or someone you love? To really be able to move quickly from places that are not so peaceful back to that centering place with a great ease? To move quickly from the horrors of war to the resolution of peace and say never, never, really this time, never again. Yeah. Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. That's right. That's the call. Let's do it. Let's do it together. Let's bring our let's bring our teachings, our principles, our prayers, our practices together. We can shift consciousness. It only takes that tipping point, right, of enough of us to shift the consciousness for good. It's interesting that it is now the season for nonviolence in the midst of this war waging in the Ukraine. And the spirit of the season for nonviolence is exactly what is called for right now. Ahimsa is the Sanskrit that means nonviolence. It's the word that Gandhi used. And it literally means a lacking of any desire to kill. But it means so much more than that. It carries a spiritual energy to it that is so much more than that. It's lacking no kind of aggression whatsoever, aggressive thoughts, aggressive words. It's lacking no kind of violence, if you will. So even in our thinking. And so it reveals a deeper meaning of the word in practice that's hard to put into words, but ahimsa has a powerful essence of love and peace behind it. So we know this, not need to be physically present in order to make change across the many miles, right? Because it's energetic, what we do, the work that we do as spiritual beings. So even if we are far away from trouble, and maybe even more so because it's out of our place of safety, our sense of safety, that we can hold the space for others in a way maybe that somebody in the midst of chaos has a harder time. So it's our practice to get to that point so that when we are in chaos, it's easier for us to hold it. Our current series proclaims the way, right? Peaceful mind, peaceful world. That is the way. In Isaiah 26, it says, "You keep in perfect peace those whose minds are steadfast, those whose thoughts are fixed on you," the divine, meaning the divine, obviously. But how can we achieve a peaceful mind when we feel anxious or afraid? Well, let's look to the example of Gandhi. Gandhi was quite successful in achieving freedom from British rule for all of his country through the practice of nonviolence, which was no small feat. And Gandhi didn't begin his life that way. He was a very scared little boy. He was painfully shy, so painfully shy that as soon as school was over, he would run home as fast as he could. He was afraid to sleep without lights on. He was afraid of serpents. He was afraid of ghosts. He was afraid of the other boys at school. He was afraid of the dark. He was afraid of so many things. And he had a nanny named Ramba who helped him through it by giving him a method to steady his mind. She said this to young Gandhi, "There's nothing wrong with admitting you are afraid." She wanted to assure him of that, and that we assure ourselves of that. There's nothing wrong with admitting we have fear, we have anxiety. That's part of being human. But we don't have to stay there. We don't have to steady our mind in that, right? We can shift, and that's what she showed him how to do. She said, whenever something threatens you, instead of running away, hold your ground and repeat the mantra, Rama, Rama, over and over again in your mind, and it can turn your fear into fearlessness. To drive the point home a little bit more, when they were during the high holy days in India, the elephants would parade down the middle of the streets, and there would be all this festivity and offerings and fruits and all kinds of wonderful things. So there were bananas and coconuts lining the streets, and you can imagine if you're an elephant, how wonderful that would be to reach out your trunk, right, and grab the coconuts and the bananas off people's trays and wherever else they might be holding them. And so she pointed out to Gandhi, Ramda did, that the elephant keeper who is wise solves that problem really easily. They give their elephant a piece of bamboo, and the elephant wraps his trunk around the bamboo so he has something to hold on to. And then he isn't interested in wandering about and getting the rest of the things because he's got his bamboo. She said, your mind is like that elephant's trunk. When it takes hold of the mantra, all the restlessness falls away. Rama is the name for the Hindu deity Vishnu. And the root of Rama means stop, witness, make still, make evident, rest, rejoice, be pleased. So Gandhi repeated Rama, Rama to himself when he was walking. And the rhythm of his footsteps and the rhythm of his breath and the rhythm of his mind and the rhythm of his inner voice all synced up into one. It became his lifelong practice. He used it to fall asleep in peace. He used it over the years, and it penetrated the deepest doubts and fears he had and established an undercurrent of joy that you can see when you see films of Gandhi, reels, you know, actual reels of Gandhi. You can see that sort of bubbling up of joy that he often had. And a big part of it was this practice that his nanny taught him. Rama, Rama were his last dying words. Actually, whatever we think of frequently is our mantra. Our thoughts are prayers, right? We are always praying. There's that song that many of you probably know. And the law of mind action in unity we know to mean thoughts held in mind produce after their kind. The things we perseverate on, the things we go back to, the things we focus on, that's what manifests. So if we have a mantra that means something to us, that is resonant of the divine, that is where we go back to time and time again, holding ourselves in that space. So we have to pay attention then, right? What am I thinking? What am I thinking? And notice, you might even get yourself practice. I'm seeing Louise and thinking about that practice that she has of setting a timer. And when we set a timer, and every time the timer goes off, we can just ask ourselves, oh, what was I thinking? And maybe then we could practice whatever our mantra is and bring ourselves back to that place. So if you notice when that goes off, I'm thinking, oh, I'm sick and tired. I'm thinking, ah, I don't deserve anything good. I'm thinking things will never change. I'm thinking, you know, I'm not safe, or whatever else it is that you might be thinking that is going to bring forth the unwanted conditions of life, we can shift. It really sounds trite, but it's so true. You know, we can change our lives by changing the way we think, But first, we have to be aware. First, we have to notice what we are thinking. Romans 12 says, "Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind." And that's the way we bring forth what it is that we want. So when we feel unsettled in times like this, it always seems natural, I think, as human beings, to come back to what is kind of tradition for us, or comfort, practice. You notice that? And so it's coming back to those base practices of prayer and meditation and that really sustain us. Those are the things that we are reaching for at this time that I think will help us the most. So if a mantra is a part of that, it can be as simple as an affirmative expression of truth, a single word, a short phrase, "I am love," "peace be still," or just "peace," or just "love," spoken over and over and over again. Gives us that sense of calm, gives us that steadiness of mind, allows us to stand in the presence of whatever circumstances and conditions might be around us that we know and remember are temporary. Those are not absolute truth, but relative truth. The relative truth of the world, it comes and goes, right? It blows like the wind. But the tree that stands and bends in the wind with ease is the one that we become when we are centered in peace, when we are practiced in these ways. So affirmative prayer is statements of truth, right? It's allowing these words to penetrate our consciousness. And it's important to remember that prayer is not something to change God's mind, right? It's to change our minds, right? That idea, the first idea, is that old school idea that there's some kind of, you know, figure in the sky, right? This grandfatherly, like, figure in the sky. But that's not the God most of us are living and breathing every day and working with every day with our own minds and hearts and bodies and relationships and lives. And so it's that aliveness, that recognition that we have responsibility and ability to make a difference by changing our own minds. So as we do, as we speak truth, we reshape our minds. As we speak truth, we change our minds, we shift. And then we outpicture from there what it is that we want to see. Gandhi says that we mirror the world. If we change ourselves, then we change the tendencies of the world as well. So if having a mantra appeals to you and you don't have one, how do you find one? Well, you could use your 2022 white stone word if you have one that resonates with you, or an intention that you might be holding. Or we could go direct to spirit and get one right now. So I want to invite you to do that, to take a moment to close your eyes and to take a breath and bring yourself into your heart space. And let's just ask Spirit right here, right now, what is my mantra? And it comes now, or it comes a little later. And if it has come now, I invite you to just say it a few times in your heart. Notice maybe with this practice that it can be, at times when you feel a little bit more anxious, it can sound kind of frenetic to say the word, and then it begins to distill. It begins to expand. It begins to quiet us. So it's a wonderful practice. So now that you have one, or soon to have one, because it may come to you later, you can use it, right? Begin to speak it to yourself. Begin to speak it to yourself when you're exercising, when you're walking, when you're driving. You can speak it to yourself anytime you're doing any activity, actually. It can be the undercurrent of your life, the constant repetition of this word. And so when you find that maybe your mind is fixed on oneness with spirit, you can speak your mantra. Or when you find that you've drifted to the false idea of separation, you can speak your mantra. You can speak it when you're afraid, when you're anxious. You can speak it when you're filled with joy. You can speak it when you're happy. It can just be your constant. I'm grateful to Lena St. Michael, who taught me the Loka chant, which is a Sanskrit chant for compassion for all beings. And I sing it under the water when I'm swimming, and it is the most amazing experience. So you can imagine the rhythm of swimming, right? So you've got the rhythm of that and the rhythm of the pool of the other swimmers, and then this chant. And it just feels like there's a reverence that I could go into, and sometimes it feels like I could just swim forever because my body's on automatic and I'm in this reverent space. And so as you bring it into your activities, you may find the same thing, that we're bringing it into the cells of our bodies. And as we sat just a few minutes ago, and just even for the few moments that some of you were speaking your affirmation in your hearts, there is that sense of we're bringing that energy, right? So throughout this room, there might have been peace and love and peace be still and harmony, and there's that kind of chant going on beneath the surface. Imagine if everybody in the world did that. If every child was born and given a mantra that was theirs, and they let it be their guiding light, their grounding space. And when in times like this, when we need to band together, if everybody was chanting their mantra, that's all it takes, is these kinds of practices to change the world, to change not only our minds, but to change the mind of the world, to change the heart of the world, to change the hearts and minds of leaders who have lost their way, and to bring them back to the truth of their own beings, to the truth that there is prosperity, there is goodness, there is enough for all of us. We don't have to pray perfectly to have perfect peace. Perfect prayer is just an expression of our hearts, an expression of gratitude. Meister Eckhart said, you know, thank you is sufficient. So it doesn't have to be complicated. It's just more the truth of what is here for us, what is authentically here for us, and what we can reach for in truth. Expressing it earnestly from the heart brings it forth in that way. Romans 8:26 says, "The Spirit helps us in our weakness, for we do not know how to pray, but that very Spirit intercedes with sighs too deep for words." Yeah, I just heard somebody audibly sigh. Yeah, because we're living in a sigh too deep for words, and isn't it comforting to know that Spirit is sighing right along with us? No matter whether we are praying for the well-being of an individual or an entire region, we won't be helpful if we get caught in the quicksand with the others. We have to stand outside the sandbox and offer the hand, right? To be on solid ground ourselves, and solid spiritual ground, in that centering place, in that knowing place that I am perfectly aligned with the divine as I speak my word, my truth, as I know this, as I remember this, as I forget all the rest that is around me. I can be that strong hand that helps another in need. I can be the one who helps pull them forward and out of this space. So we find ourselves in our peace and in our sanity when we don't get into the sandbox with others, the quicksand and the drama. And so how do we stay out of that and stay informed and manage our feelings and all of that? One of the ways is we don't see others in the problem, right? Don't exacerbate the problem by immersing ourselves in the images of the problem, in the words of the problem. Just, you know, we watch enough news to know the facts, and then we get back to our practice. It's easy to get sucked into the sensationalism of it all, but it doesn't help us. It doesn't help anyone. And so it's that finding that balance for ourselves of what is helpful, how much information is helpful, and then what can I do with that information? How can I be of service? How can I get grounded once again in spirit, aligned once again with the truth of the peace and the harmony and the freedom that we want? Spirit intercedes with sighs too deep for words, so we can release the grief, and then we can lift up in consciousness ourselves and each other, past the seeming reality of any situation to that absolute place of truth. The words of Jesus could be our intention for others, maybe specifically for the people of Ukraine, if that's feeling on your heart today, when he says, "Peace I leave with you, and peace I give to you. I do not give to you as the world gives. Do not let your hearts be troubled. Do not be afraid." So that's prayer, mantras, affirmation, praying for others, one of the huge bodies of work that we can enter into for ourselves and for each other. What about meditation? What about that? Do you say that your mind is too busy for that? A lot of people do. They say, "Well, I can't meditate. My mind is too busy." And it's like, well, then all the more reason that we need meditation, right? So even a moment, a pause, a simple reflection can help us get there. So there's a story from Guru Maya tells out of the Siddha Yoga tradition. And it's about this king who's very proud of himself because he has trained, which, you know, it is actually a worthy feat. He has trained 12 cats to sit still with lamps on their heads while he has a feast. And so he's so excited to tell his prime minister, Birbo, how he has, you know, show him what he has done as king. And so he invites Birbo to the dinner and he says, "Look what I've done." And all the cats sit there with the lamps on their heads while the feast is eaten. And Birbo says, "Very good, king. Would you mind if I come back again tomorrow night to enjoy the feat?" Oh, the king puffs up with pride. "I would love it if you come again and again and again. I will have a special feast made for us tomorrow night." And so Birbo comes the next night. And once again, all the cats, or the 12 cats, are sitting around all still with their little paws, I imagine, in the meditative pose, the lamps on top of their heads. And Birbo slips his hand in his pocket just as the king is about to take a bite, and he releases two mice on the table. And you can imagine what happened to all those peaceful cats with the lamps on their heads, right? We are so much like the king's cat. Cats. Our minds are, aren't they? We can get 1 minute of steadiness, oh, perfect steadiness with our little paws, just so, you know, in the abiding light of the divine. Oh, wow, what a meditation, what a moment, what an epiphany, what an insight, how peaceful I am. And then the next moment, we're off, right? So it's the chasing of thoughts, just like a cat chasing a mouse. It's the chasing of thoughts. We think, suddenly, "I am writing the great American novel. That is an awesome idea." And off we go, right? Or we think terrible thoughts, you know, we're perseverating on what she said or he said or they said and happened. And, oh, how can I fix that? And what do I need to do? How should I go back? And, oh, you know, this happens in our, do these things happen in meditation for you too? Okay, good. Like that, our spiritual minister teacher doesn't really, you know, have a very good practice. But it's that recognition. What Birbo knew was the nature of the mind, right? Birbo knew is the mind, the nature, he knew the nature of cats. And so the nature of the mind is similar. The nature of the mind is to think, right? That's what the mind is for. It's going to think for us. Thank goodness. We need it to think for us. And so it's the stilling process that we can be kind to ourselves and recognize that we are teaching the mind to do something else that it is also capable of, and we also need it to do, which is to be still. To be still and know. To be still and know that I am. To be still and know peace. And so that's when we catch our mind chasing a thought, we can toss it something to chew on, a mantra, a short phrase, affirmative phrase, so that it can then repeat it over and over and over again. The mind is happy. It's getting to do what it does. And you are still achieving that steady mind of peace. And there will be times that we perform that great feat of the illumined mind in those moments, and there will be times we chase, but it's all a part of our practice. As we practice meditation and prayer and mantras, we study our minds on truth, and we rest in peace, and from that peace, so much good comes. From that peace, there is greater clarity for the decisions that we make in our lives. From that peace, our responses are more loving and more wise. Our contributions are more effective. And joy abides in us, just like that underpinning of joy abided for Gandhi through all that he went through and his people went through. With practice, we are quicker to notice when our minds have strayed, quicker to give our minds something nourishing to chew on. You keep in perfect peace those whose minds are steadfast, those whose thoughts are fixed on you, Isaiah says, because they trust in you. So let's trust in the divine. Let's trust in the human heart to let the truth prevail. Let's trust in ourselves, our own practices. Let's trust in the knowing that peace begins with us, that as our minds stay on peace, we manifest a world of peace. Let's know it together. Let's really get into our hearts and speak this truth together. And if a mantra has come to you, let's begin to practice together all week long. So let's first speak our affirmation together. As my mind stays on peace, the world comes to peace. And a moment, quiet moment for you to just speak in your heart your mantra a few times.